Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode contains distressing themes and descriptions of violence. This podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener caution is advised. Many teenagers who grew up in British seaside towns thought they had little to do. Tourists still came, but not in droves like the Victorian heyday. Testament to the decreasing popularity of the former Grand Hotel on Bent Hill in Felixstowe, which was regularly at full capacity when it was built in the 1890s, the building became home to a popular drinking spot 100 years later. By night in the late 90s, the Bandbox Club and Splits Bar had countless coatless young people lining up outside the doors to get inside. Often the wait was cold in the biting North Sea air. Partygoers shuffled slowly in the queue as bouncers decided who could get in, but this didn't deter people from hanging around. By day, Felixstowe in Suffolk is more slow-paced. Tourists and retirees enjoy fish and chips, ice cream, and blue flag beaches. Life is peaceful. Be that as it may, a senseless murder in 1999 was one of the biggest and most complex cases officers in the port town ever had to investigate.
She was girly. She liked to dance. She liked makeup. She liked hair. And she loved clothes. A proper little girl.
There will be people in the community that have information that they didn't feel able to share, and that may be possible for them now.
We have never forgotten Victoria Hall, and we will not forget her.
If it was an accident, why didn't you deal with it there and then? If it wasn't an accident, why did you leave her in such a horrible condition?
Welcome to Season 8, Episode 43 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. This is the penultimate case of Season 8. Victoria Hall, otherwise known as Vicky, lived with her mother Lorinda, her father Graham, and her brother Stephen, who was just a couple of years younger than his sister. The family of four had lived on Falconer's Way for about 12 years. The home was stable and loving. Graham worked as a book agent and Lorinda was employed as a shop assistant. Vicky's father volunteered some free time to manage a local under-16s football team, and his wife joined him as the secretary. The Halls were in their mid-40s and were proud of their growing children. Vicky attended sixth form at Orwell High School. She was in her second year of A-levels, focusing on English business studies and sociology. Vicky planned to attend university, but that was a year away. In the meantime, to save money, she worked part-time in a clothes shop which fitted in with her studies. Saturday, September 18th, 1999. Vicky Hall was getting dressed up for a night out at the Bandbox nightclub with her best friend Gemma Algar. Vicky left the house at approximately 9 p.m. Her father, Graham, gave her a lift to the club and said, "Get a taxi back," before he pulled away. Vicky's outfit was typical of the time. A spaghetti strap black dress with a frill in the same colour at the bottom of the garment. A thin, tailored, tan-coloured wool jacket from New Look, part of a range released 12 years earlier. And strappy platform satin effects size 5 sandals with chunky heels. She had temporarily fixed the insoles with sellotape when they started to peel up. Vicky wore a lipstick brand named Rimmel, thought to be in her most well-used shade, Zorro. Also in her possession was a purse and a front door key so she didn't have to wake up her parents when she tiptoed in during the early hours. At 17, Vicky was slightly underage to be going clubbing, but checking ID was known to be more lax, especially if you were female. She was only 2 weeks away from her 18th birthday. Going out on nights like this was a new thing for Vicky. She had only been going to nightclubs with her friends for the last 3 months, as previously her parents didn't allow her to attend until she was nearing legal age. However, when she did go, she wasn't a drinker. She just enjoyed going out to dance. Vicky and her friend Gemma enjoyed their night out and wound things up at 1 a.m. Unsettlingly, extra security had been employed on the door and there were safety concerns. The previous week, a teenager had been raped in an alleyway nearby, and the week before, someone else was followed home. The bouncers were instructed to tell women to be safe as they left the club. Taxis were hard to come by during the post-nightclub rush, and the girls decided to walk home to save money. Sometimes Vicky would call her parents to collect her, but not tonight. They wanted to stop for some hot food, so they paused at one of the places still open at that hour, Bodrum Grill on Undercliff Road West, just 3 minutes away. The girls ordered some chips and ate them as they continued their walk. While they were in town, a CCTV camera recording in black and white briefly captured the pair on their journey. Afterwards, Gemma and Vicky made their way towards their respective homes, parting ways around 2:20 a.m. near the junction of High Road and Falconer's Way. Before they separated, Vicky promised to ring Gemma the next day. Gemma complained about her blistered feet after dancing and walking so far in her going-out shoes. She told Vicky she would probably hear her say "ouch" as she walked away. A few minutes after leaving Vicky, Gemma heard screams as she passed an alleyway. Shortly thereafter, a few locals were awoken by a loud vehicle which sounded like a sports car, with what was described as a throaty exhaust. From where she stood, Gemma couldn't see anything, so she brushed off the screaming and continued her journey. She arrived home at 2:30 a.m. Due to the late hour, it wasn't discovered that Vicky had not come home until the morning. She was last seen in the early hours on High Road on the border of Felixstowe in Trimley, St Mary. When her mother and father saw their daughter's bed hadn't been slept in, they called the police at 8:20 a.m. When the missing person inquiry began, it was clear Vicky Hall was not a runaway. All the evidence so far was concerning. The statements that recalled screaming near the location where Vicky was last seen and the sound of the car pointed to a possible abduction on Falconer's Way, 2.3 miles from the Bandbox nightclub and a few hundred yards from her home. Leading the investigation, Detective Superintendent Roy Lambert from the Suffolk Constabulary said, "We are very concerned for her safety. We believe it unlikely that she decided to head off anywhere after saying goodbye to her friend." Sniffer dogs, helicopters, officers going door to door taking statements, and the usual investigative avenues did not lead to Victoria Hall. Vicky had a boyfriend she met at school, but he claimed he did not know where she was. Investigators had to be sure he wasn't involved and even searched his parents' caravan, which was about 40 miles away in Southwold. The police turned up nothing. No sign that he or anyone they had spoken to so far knew where the 17-year-old was. Graham Hall expressed his fears and appealed to his daughter.
"After more than 2 days, we are becoming increasingly desperate and worried for Victoria's safety. And to Victoria, if you are in a position to ring us, please do, as we're desperate to speak to you. Nothing you have done cannot mean that you can't speak to us. Please do contact us."
Several days after Vicky's disappearance on September 21st, a local man was taken into custody.
A 21-year-old man was arrested at his home in East Ipswich at about 5:25 a.m. He was arrested on suspicion of abduction and is currently being held and will be questioned by detectives.
And still no sign of Vicky?
No, as yet we have been unable to locate her.
After 18 hours of questioning, the man who was said to be Vicky's ex-boyfriend was released on bail. There was no evidence to connect Vicky's disappearance to the rape of a girl of a similar age near the Bandbox nightclub, nor was there any information that would exclude the two from being linked at the time. About 25 miles from where Vicky Hall was last seen, a discovery was made. It was Friday, September 24th. A full 5 days had passed since Vicky was abducted. Jim Armour was walking his Lurcher Holly in Creating St. Peter, a quaint village near Stowmarket in the middle of Suffolk. Something piqued the dog's interest that had been discarded in a waterlogged ditch near Pond Road. The road is used as a cut-through between Stowmarket and Stow Upland. It runs through the village and adjoins Creating Lane, then on to Rolling Fields. Initially not realising what he was seeing, reasoning it was a female mannequin left in the water, Jim and Holly went home, but it was playing on his mind. Jim later explained, "I was surprised and wondered why someone would put it there. I called my dog away. She was reluctant to come, which was unusual. On my way back home, doubt came to me that all was not what I thought. Some relatives were with us at the weekend and I told them what I'd seen. My wife, sister, sister's husband and her son decided we should take another look. After looking at the form in the torchlight, we felt something was not right and that we should call the police." They found the body at about 7:30 p.m.
"As soon as we know a cause of death, we'll give it to you. Similarly, formal identification can't take place until after the post-mortem. And once that's taken place, we will confirm the identity. But at this time, it is fair to say we do believe it is probably the missing teenager, Vicky Hall."
Earlier today, the woman's body was removed from the protective tent that had been erected for forensic tests. Accompanied by a Home Office pathologist, it was taken to a nearby hospital for a post-mortem to be carried out.
The young woman was quickly identified as Victoria Hall. She was naked, and the clothing Vicky was wearing on the night she was last seen alive appeared to be missing, along with some accessories. She had taken out a black oval-shaped purse, and a house key with a fob that said Vicky across the top and Victoria down the sides. She was also said to have an accessory that kept up her blonde hair. It was wooden in a circular style, with a stick that passed through her hair to keep it in place. The area was searched, but none of Vicky's possessions were found in the vicinity of her body.
That's terrible. I mean, it's not just terrible for our village. It's terrible that it's come in this direction, basically, you know, for the parents.
Someone must have known this was quiet, I would think. It would appear to me that he knew the area quite well.
The murder investigation was codenamed Operation Avon. 50 officers were initially assigned to the case. A post-mortem examination did not provide a clear picture as to how Victoria Hall died, but a pathologist did note some degree of asphyxiation. There were no signs of strangulation or evidence that the teenager had been sexually assaulted. A second post-mortem was carried out in late October, confirming the first findings. Bruising to a muscle on her back near her shoulder was noted. Vicky's body had been recorded as being in the shallow water for some time, probably put there shortly after her disappearance. Pupils at Vicky's school were offered counselling following her death, and an assembly was held on the day she would have turned 18. Although the teachers and pupils were saddened and horrified by the loss of Vicky, one teenager was hit the hardest, Gemma Algar. The two had been close since the start of primary school. Gemma said the pair were inseparable, best friends, comparable to sisters. Gemma said, "Vicky never hurt anybody. She didn't deserve this." The Bandbox nightclub was a focal point in the investigation. Officers from the Suffolk Constabulary stood at the door on weekends, questioning people as they came in. A minute's silence was held for Vicky one evening when the clock struck midnight. Meanwhile, detectives were trying to find Vicky's clothing and accessories. Of particular interest was the jacket she was wearing. It was an unusual item due to its age. If anyone were to find the garment with oversized lapels and three buttons, investigators wanted to know. An informal service was held at St. Martin's Church in Trimley, St. Mary, and hundreds of people attended. The priest addressed the unusually large congregation. "All of us are in great turmoil as we see things happening in our society which are pure evil and beyond belief. Who would have thought a young girl could not walk safely from Felixstowe to Trimley at night and not be attacked? And yet it has happened." Much time would pass before the public were told of a CCTV camera pointing towards the area where Victoria Hall's body was found, installed to potentially record the killer if they returned to the scene. Footage showed several people with torches in the dark on October 18th at 7:50 p.m. This was almost a month after Vicky's body was found. There was no way to tell who had visited the scene, as the only thing visible on camera was the light from the torches. Another person visited 11 days earlier on October 7th. Although the footage was grainy, investigators were hopeful the man in the picture could be identified. The recording pictures a small transit van pulling up with a logo formed of two lines, one horizontal and one diagonal, reaching the undercarriage on the side of the vehicle. The pattern is likely a business logo. The van is white, the type a tradesperson would keep tools in. A lone man leaves the car via the driver's seat. His features are unclear, although it's possible to garner from his bare forearms that he is white. He is of medium build. It is hard to see if his clothes are a uniform. If they were, it would consist of a simple polo button-down neck shirt with some kind of emblem. The footage is stamped clearly with the date, October 7th, 1999, and the time recorded at 12:35. Possibly the man is on his break. He gets out of the vehicle and looks around the area, walking on the grass, initially peering from left to right. The footage ends when he gets into his van and pulls away. In addition to the CCTV footage, a burnt-out car was found nearby around the time that Vicky Hall's body was discovered. Detectives were eager to find out if it was linked to what happened to Vicky or was a mere coincidence. The Subaru was set alight in a field a mile and a half away at 5:30 on the morning Vicky was attacked. Detectives found that the vehicle was purchased in Rawmarsh, South Yorkshire in March of that year. The buyer, a man in his 30s, was named Paul Sanderson, but he couldn't be traced. As the investigation unfolded, Victoria Hall's ex-boyfriend, who had been arrested, was not charged as he was no longer considered a suspect. Detectives then shifted their focus. On May 11, 2000, news broke that Adrian Bradshaw, a 27-year-old who lived in Trimley St Mary, had been arrested for Victoria Hall's murder. His car was taken away for forensic examination. The businessman who ran a local paper was released on bail shortly after. He remained a suspect, and a week before Christmas, Bradshaw was arrested again and charged with murder.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
After Adrian Bradshaw had been in custody for 10 months, a 2-week trial began in Norwich Crown Court in November 2001. Mr. Justice Moses presided over the case. Michael Lawson, QC acting for the Crown, pointed out that at the time of Victoria Hall's murder, Bradshaw lived on the Wheelwrights, a cul-de-sac in Trimley St. Mary, just a few minutes' walk from the Hall family home on Falconer's Way. The prosecutor told the court after Gemma Algar and Vicky Hall separated that night. A few minutes into Gemma's journey, she heard what was described as a couple of screams. Michael Lawson QC explained further. To start with, she thought they were larking about, but then it occurred to her that it might be someone being attacked. She didn't think it was her friend. Other witnesses heard the screams too and thought the tone was from someone frightened, not being playful. Lawson continued, "Whatever the difference in the accounts, the timing is the same. 2:30 a.m. So we know that was the time Victoria Hall was accosted and abducted. There was a curious coincidence in the evidence." Adrian Bradshaw pleaded not guilty, but was accused of ending Vicky's life sometime between September 19th and September 24th, 1999. On the night she was abducted, Bradshaw had been out drinking. After returning home, he said he just went to bed. Moreover, he claimed it had been over a decade since he visited the village where Vicky's body was found. Certain of his innocence, Bradshaw's family and friends attended court daily to support him. Similarly, Victoria Hall's parents, teenage brother and best friend sat quietly in the public gallery focused on the proceedings. The court was told that Adrian Bradshaw was also in the Bandbox nightclub that evening, but he vehemently denied seeing Vicky. He had shared a taxi home with his friend and two women. He lived near where Gemma Algar and Vicky Hall parted ways after their night out. Bradshaw was highly intoxicated, consuming an estimated 10 pints of beer, 7 before he got to Bandbox and shots of vodka. It had been a heavy night on a pub crawl with his friend Peter Dugdale in Felixstowe, the Bandbox being his last stop of the evening. When the taxi dropped him off, Bradshaw thought he was outside his home a few hundred yards from where Vicky and Gemma separated. However, he was too drunk to be sure. The accounts of the defendant's friend Peter Dugdale and the two women they travelled with differed, so there was no agreed location as to where exactly Bradshaw was dropped off. Still, the prosecution argued it was nearer to where Vicky and Gemma last saw each other. Adrian Bradshaw was interviewed in May 2000, about 8 months after Vicky's murder. His recollection of the night was hazy, not just because of the time that had passed, but due to the alcohol he had consumed. Bradshaw believed that it was just bad luck that he was dropped in the vicinity of where a violent crime was committed. On the 9th day of the trial, Bradshaw took the stand to testify. He was clear and direct when addressing the 5 women and 7 men of the jury. "I have got absolutely nothing to do with the disappearance or murder of Vicky Hall," he said. The defendant categorically denied visiting Crete and St. Peter around the time Victoria Hall was murdered or after. The only time he had been to the area was over 13 years before. The closest he came in recent years was near Stowmarket, where he played in a football match on a school field. A friend of the defendant's, Mr. Elwood, who played for the same amateur football team, took the stand. He recounted how on September 19th, the same day Victoria Hall was last seen in the early morning hours, Adrian Bradshaw had given him a lift at 9:15 a.m. On the way to Nacton to play an away game for the Owl and Pussycat team, who were based in Felixstowe, Elwood noticed nothing unusual in the car, or that his friend was acting strangely. It was, however, noted that Bradshaw was generally quiet. When questioned by Defence Counsel David Cox QC, Elwood admitted that he wasn't close to Bradshaw. In fact, the friends hadn't known each other that long. Witness Mrs. Osborne, who lived in Curtin, a village near Trimley St. Martin, was visited by Adrian Bradshaw on a business matter after Vicky's murder. He had to collect a cheque. Bradshaw arrived in his blue Porsche 944. Mrs. Osborne noticed how loud the vehicle was. She had also heard the throaty car leave the scene the Sunday morning Vicky was abducted. She brought up hearing the car to Adrian Bradshaw. Michael Lawson, QC for the prosecution, recounted what happened next. When she mentioned it, he asked if she had reported it to the police, and when she said she had, he asked if they had been round to see her. The conversation inevitably turned to Victoria Hall, and she got the impression every time she mentioned Victoria that he tried to steer the conversation to other murders. The prosecutor explained that another person, Mrs. Bozier, had an interaction with Adrian Bradshaw after the kidnapping but before Vicky's body was discovered. Mrs. Bozier had given Bradshaw a lift somewhere on the spur of the moment. The conversation in the car turned to the missing teenager. Mrs. Bozier claimed that her passenger said he had seen Gemma and Vicky at the Bandbox Club and was familiar with them occasionally walking in the area. Michael Lawson, QC, told the court about a puzzling portion of the conversation in which Mrs. Bozier presumed the fate of Vicky while she was still missing. Lawson said, "For some reason which Mrs. Bozier cannot understand why, she commented that Vicky was dead. There was a startling reaction from the defendant, who looked shocked and said, 'Who told you that?'" Forensic scientist Kenneth Pye of London University put forward evidence discovered on the accelerator pedal of Adrian Bradshaw's Porsche. Pye testified the 10 grains of soil lifted from the accused vehicle bore a striking similarity to the type of earth found where Victoria Hall's body had been left. The prosecution suggested this tied the defendant to the scene. However, the defence also had the soil analysed by geologist Dr. Andrew Moncrief, who believed it was typical soil found in many places throughout East Anglia. It was noted that Adrian Bradshaw had exchanged a white Porsche 924 for the blue one he owned at the time of Vicky's murder. In the swap, he took the floor mats from his old car and put them in the new vehicle. What's more, a statement from witness Mr. Johnson was read aloud to the court. He claimed on the morning of September 19th at approximately 6 a.m, he witnessed a car, not a Porsche, but a blue Vauxhall Astra, pull out of a junction off Pound Road in Creating, St. Peter. It was argued by the prosecution that Victoria Hall was attacked and then dragged into the Porsche. But despite this claim, no forensic evidence suggested she had been in the vehicle. In his closing statement, David Cox, QC, acting for the defence, dismissed the strength of the prosecution's case based on the evidence they had presented. "With DNA, it's very convincing stuff," he said. "It's the equivalent of fingerprints. But we are not in the same field here. We are in the field of judgment and opinion. The question is not, do the soil samples from the footwell of the Porsche and the site where the body was found match, but how can we be sure the footwell samples haven't come from somewhere else in East Anglia? Unless you are sure they haven't come from somewhere else, you cannot convict Mr. Bradshaw. How do we know they weren't put in the car by someone else who owned the car or drove it previously?" David Cox, QC, suggested the suspicion should be diverted to the driver of the blue Astra. The barrister branded the evidence wholly threadbare, and contrary to the prosecution's case, said their arguments had proven his client's innocence. Cox told the jury, "Your verdict must be one of not guilty so that Mr. Bradshaw can go back into the community and have an end put to this nightmare so that we can let him try to rebuild his life." At approximately 10:40 a.m., the seven men and five women on the jury left the courtroom to decide Adrian Bradshaw's fate. They returned at 12:10 p.m. Bradshaw put his head in his hands before the verdict was read aloud. A lone juror stood to respond to the question of whether the jury found Bradshaw guilty. The words, "not guilty," echoed through the courtroom. Adrian Bradshaw was a free man. After the verdict, Mr. Justice Moses addressed the court. "Throughout the case, all those from families of both sides have behaved with enormous dignity and have attracted admiration from all of us in court. Undoubtedly, what happened in September 1999 was the most appalling tragedy, and all our sympathies go to the family of Vicky Hall. But it is important for all of us to recall that a trial which ends with a not guilty verdict is just as much a vindication that justice has been done as a trial which ends in guilty." Coincidentally, the day the man accused of murdering Vicky Hall was acquitted, it was also her mother's birthday. With the quiet dignity they have always displayed, Lorinda and Graham Hall joined hands with Vicky's best friend Gemma and left the court. Speaking to waiting reporters, Gemma Algar said, "The attacker will never know how much pain he has caused Vicky's family and friends and will never feel as terrified as Vicky probably did that night. The last 2 years have been very up and down emotionally for me as I try to get my head around what had happened." Detective Superintendent Roy Lambert, who led the investigation, also spoke with the media. "I am very, very disappointed with the verdict. Our job is to obtain as much evidence as we possibly can and place it before the court. I believe in this case we have done that. I was surprised that the jury came back so quickly." Adrian Bradshaw was relieved that his ordeal was over, but at the same time he extended sympathy to Vicky's family. His solicitor, Simon Nichols, highlighted that his client had spent almost a year in prison but was acquitted in 90 minutes. Nichols said, "It vindicates the fact that he has always protested his innocence throughout the whole investigation. Now, after a long and traumatic period in his life, justice has been very clearly done." The trial and verdict must have been extremely hard for Victoria Hall's family, who were back to square one, no nearer to knowing who killed their loved one and why. Vicky's father, Graham, explained, "Whether Adrian Bradshaw was found guilty or not really made very little difference to us. Unless someone actually owns up to their actions on that night and tells us exactly what happened, that is the only little bit of help we could have. Victoria will never be with us again. We have got to live with that, as has the murderer. He knows who he is and has got to live with it too." Graham Hall was asked if he felt the evidence against Adrian Bradshaw was strong enough. Graham was very considerate of his response when replying, "That is a very difficult question to answer, when we've known what has been going on for 2 years. It was inconclusive in the end, and that was difficult for the jury to consider. I'm sure they gave it their full consideration and felt it was fair to Adrian Bradshaw to release him." When he was released from custody, Adrian Bradshaw expressed his frustrations with the investigation. He said, "The police have spent £1 million on this inquiry, and it took a jury of 12 normal people to acquit me in just over an hour. So I think that speaks for itself as regards to the police." Bradshaw branded the legal proceedings a show trial. He was aware that some people would still question his innocence and considered the possibility that a black cloud would follow him until the person who killed Victoria Hall was caught. While Bradshaw was in custody for nearly a year, his friend had to take over his business to keep it afloat. There were reports that he was going to seek compensation. 2 months after being acquitted, acquaintances and colleagues said Bradshaw seemed upbeat and his usual self. Much was made of his acquittal, but soon after, an ex-girlfriend came forward and told the press that Bradshaw, her boyfriend of 3 years, was violent during that time. Police urged her to make a formal statement. The focus on Adrian Bradshaw died down, and eventually so did the reporting. Vicky Hall was not forgotten. A mass fundraising effort in the community led to a total of £260,000, which was used to build the Victoria Hall Pavilion. Fifteen years passed since Vicky Hall's body was found in a watery ditch. Although she was on her family's mind every day, her father Graham said he now believed his daughter's killer would never face justice. In the wake of such an awful loss, Graham speculated on how the killer may have felt since they ended her life. He believed the act was random, a one-off for whoever did it, and they must be harbouring guilt for what they had done. Graham told the East Anglian Daily Times, "I think his sentence has been that he's lived for 15 years with this. I always think we are programmed to take the blame for what we do. He's gone to bed every night thinking he's taken someone's life. Although he hasn't served a sentence in prison, he's had to live with it all the time. Every day he must think, 'God, I did that.' He must have talked to somebody. I can't believe with a secret of that magnitude he would have kept it to himself. He must have told somebody. Perhaps it's the time for someone to speak up. If anybody knows anything, we would want them to say." Vicky's brother Stephen had reached 30 and was a father, making Graham and Lorinda grandparents. They had remained in their home at Falconer's Way, feeling that moving and leaving the place where their daughter grew up was not an option. A decade and a half was a long time. Perhaps some locals avoided speaking to the Halls as a coping mechanism, or did not know what to say. Some residents who were only children when Vicky was killed might have had no memory of the event. In September 2019, a surprising development unfolded when Suffolk Police revealed that Operation Avon was once again a live inquiry.
17-year-old Victoria Hall disappeared after a night out in Felixstowe in 1999. A few days later, her body was discovered in a ditch 25 miles away.
Well, detectives say they now have new information which they are describing as significant. Officers are also reviewing previous evidence to try and bring some form of closure to Victoria's parents.
For 20 years, who killed Vicky Hall has been a mystery, a question her parents have been desperate to find an answer to. On the anniversary of her disappearance, they might just be closer to getting it.
Gives us enthusiasm, perhaps, that now that things will go forward again, and perhaps this time it will get a positive conclusion.
17 officers and police staff were working full-time trying to piece together who had murdered Victoria Hall decades before. It was at this point when the black and white footage of the man in a white van who visited the location where Vicky's body was disposed of was finally released to the public. Through the fresh appeal, more than 40 calls were received. Graham Hall, Vicky's father, spoke about the new lines of inquiry. They are sifting through those calls, but it's a painstaking thing. It gives us hope. Don't forget, it's 20 years. It's a long while. But there's hope still. Describing what would happen if someone came forward with new information that could turn the case on its head, Graham told a correspondent for the BBC, "It won't bring Victoria back if we find out who did it, but it would give us closure. We wonder what happened on that night, why the person decided to do this, why they decided to take her to Creating and dump her body in the water." Vicky Hall's mother, Lorinda, would later voice her belief that her daughter's killer could still be in Felixstowe. She spoke about the extended impact of losing someone to murder. "It's not so much that the person might still be round here. It's that this person has put us through this. You have got to live with that. You've destroyed our lives, not only our daughters, and every close family member and her friends. Being near or far doesn't really come into it because the hurt and pain is there." By September 2020, with the new exposure since the 20th anniversary of Vicky's murder, another 50 calls on top of the 40 from the previous year had come in. Then in late July 2021, an arrest was made. The suspect hadn't been arrested in connection with the case before, but he was serving time in prison for other sexual and violent crimes against women. New witnesses had come forward which led to the man's arrest, but the nature of the evidence was not revealed by investigators working on the case. After being questioned by detectives, the suspect was subsequently released back to prison pending further investigation. The Suffolk Constabulary did not name him. However, one newspaper leaked who the person was. He had appeared in the headlines years earlier for murdering women in Suffolk. Senior investigating officer Detective Chief Inspector Matthew Connick, who had taken over since many original investigators on the case had long since retired, explained, "I have been working on this case for the past 3 years, so I am fully embedded in the inquiry and have been able to seamlessly pick up the baton from my predecessors who had made significant inroads already. We remain fully committed to this inquiry. The work being undertaken is extremely time-consuming but absolutely necessary. The anniversary date of Victoria's disappearance is always a time of reflection for us, as well as Victoria's family and friends. We never lose sight of the young life ended so needlessly at the centre of everything we are doing. We continue to be grateful for the support and patience of Victoria's family, and we ensure they are provided with regular updates as to the progress we are making. They understand the vital lengths that we need to take to achieve the end goal for us all, which is to achieve justice for Victoria. I would like to renew our appeal to anyone with information about Victoria's murder who has not yet come forward to do the right thing and contact us. If you have any information, no matter how insignificant this may seem, we want to hear from you. It is never too late." By July 2022, 8 more full-time staff were working on the case in a colossal undertaking, reviewing over 3,500 hours of CCTV footage and 43,000 documents. Vicky's family patiently waited as the investigation continued, past the 24th anniversary of the crime, marked on September 19th, 2023. Then, 3 months later, on Wednesday, December 6th of that year, The same man who was arrested in 2021 was rearrested on suspicion of murder. So where are we now? In the first week of December 2023, news about an update on the Victoria Hall case was published. The man arrested in July 2021 was back under the microscope. The Daily Telegraph printed his name. Serial killer Steve Wright had been taken for an interview from his prison cell, where he was serving a whole life order for the murder of five women in Ipswich in 2006. At the time of Victoria Hall's murder, Wright was living in a block of flats on Runnacles Way in Felixstowe, which is about 1.9 miles from Falconer's Way or 7 minutes by car. A witness had come forward after seeing footage from BBC's Crime Watch in 2019. As well as a reconstruction of Vicky's evening, the television programme played the grainy CCTV footage of the man visiting the ditch 3 weeks after Vicky's murder. Someone who knew Steve Wright said he owned an identical white van at the time, and his build and height matched the man in the footage. 15 years before, in 2008, the Halls responded to suggestions that Steve Wright could be involved. At the time, they were informed there was no connection. Graham Hall told the Eastern Daily Press, "The police have been to see us 3 times, including this week, and although they say there were some very similar aspects, they say there is no connection with Victoria's death." At present, Steve Wright has been released under investigation pending further inquiries. With the inquiry into Victoria Hall's case ongoing, the crimes of Steve Wright will be covered in the final 2 episodes of Season 8 of They Walk Among Us. Detectives investigating Victoria Hall's death are continuing to request that anyone with information about the case contact the major investigation team. The incident room can be called in the UK on 01473 613 513, or Crime Stoppers can be contacted anonymously. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our patrons for their support. For more information on this episode, please see the show notes or visit our website, theywalkamonguspodcast.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.